our first try it in muscle. We've looked at our first type of striated muscle, the skeletal muscle. And we know about it. We know it's long. We know it's multinucleated, peripherally located nuclei, lots of myofibrils in the cytoplasm, which are specialized organs, and which are made up of myofilaments, and that these myofilaments are arranged along the myofibril to form sarcomeres, and that is a basic functional unit of your contraction unit of your skeletal muscle. We've learned about the neuromuscular junction, and we know that sensory function is due to muscle spindle. We can identify skeletal muscle both in cross-section and longitudinal section, and we're very comfortable with naming the connective tissue layers that are associated with skeletal muscle. So that is, in summary, what we just did. Plus, we're going to review the contraction cycle and kind of know what happens at each of the five stages, all right? So now we're going to talk about the next type of striated muscle, our cardiac muscle. So cardiac muscle, like skeletal muscle, has a striated appearance. It has cross striations because you do have your myofibrils, which are myofilaments, that nice regular arrangement. So that's very similar, as you can see here. We see the cross striations, right? But however, you can notice something different. See here, you have your nuclei within the cell. In the case of the skeletal muscle, the nuclei were located on the periphery, because the cytoplasm was so filled up with myofibrils that the nuclei were pushed towards the side. In the case of the cardiac muscle, the nuclei are located in the center of the cell. Now, these cells, cardiac myocytes or cardiac muscle fibers, tend to be branched. So they look like long pants. So they're branched. And they contain usually one or two nuclei. So we have one here, not see one with two here, one here, but they're within the cytoplasmic material of the organelle. You're going to find cardiac muscle, as the name suggests, in your heart, so in the walls of the ventricle and atrium, as well as some texts also say you may find it at the beginning of the aorta and pulmonary trunk. I've not seen that as yet, but it's possible. And another important feature is these junctional complexes that are very characteristic of cardiac muscle cells. Now, look at the nuclei of this cardiac myocyte. Do you notice some little granular-looking stuff around it, like here? Some little granules around it? So around the nuclei of cardiac myocytes, you find granules that contain, especially in the atrium, you find granules that secrete natriuretic peptides, or peptides that cause diuresis. You have ANF, atrial natriuretic peptide, and you may have BNF, which is brain natriuretic peptide being produced or being stored in the granules around the nucleus of the cardiac myocytes. In older patients and older persons, you will also find granules, lipofuscin granules, which are age pigment associated with the nucleus. You always see them in that particular region. Right? Cardiac muscle cell is highly specialized for contraction, automated contraction, yes? They produce natriuretic peptides, and these are diuretic factors. So, where were we? What were we talking about? All right. Where were we? Just lost my train of thought. It's the old age. Oh my God. Where was I? What was the last thing I said? What is the last thing I said? Guys, come help me out here. What was the last thing I said? Old people, exactly what I was saying. Lipofuscin granules, oh my goodness. Around the nucleus of these cells, all right? Now, because the cardiac muscle is specialized for this automated and very strong contraction that keeps you alive, you're going to find an abundance of mitochondria. These are very big mitochondria with abundant cristae on the inside. Those are very abundant in the cardiac cells. And you also have glycogen stores. So there's a possibility of anaerobic respiration taking place there. You have fail-safe, lots of mitochondria and glycogen stores. Now, these junctional complexes we just mentioned are called intercalated discs, and they're very characteristic of cardiac muscles. They're the only place in the body you can find those. And they are nothing more than glorified junctional complexes containing that look like a stepladder in the electron micrograph. So these are intercalated discs. And they demarcate the location of the termination of one cardiac myocyte from another. So that'll be one cardiac myocyte here. Notice this is another cardiac myocyte. You see the long pans appearance? 2 feet? Okay. So these are your atrial, these are the cardiac myocytes that you're going to find in the atrium. And this is the nucleus here, and these are the perinuclear granules. See, atrial natriuretic factor and brain natriuretic factor. They are hormones that are, they act as antidiuretic hormone. They actually act on the, you've done ER, have you done ER as yet? No, that's next module. But when you do the endocrine module, you're going to see how they interact with the aldosterone, angiotensin, renin system to help in regulation of blood pressure. They also inhibit contraction of vascular smooth muscles, so they help definitely in regulating blood pressure. And these are the granules here. So compare this to the pictures that you saw before of your skeletal muscle. Remember we said skeletal muscle, it was nice and rounded, a very, very nice rounded structure. And you had your nuclei in the periphery. Look at the cardiac myocytes. They're not rounded. They're branched. And you have a nuclei in the center of the cytoplasm of the cell in the cross-section. So that is very characteristic of skeletal muscle in cross-section. Okay? Notice one nuclei here and another one here, binucleated. And the nuclei may have different sizes based on where you take the section. So let's look at our intercalated disc, which is characteristic of skeletal muscle. We see them here in abundance, and we see them at high magnification, and they're actually stepladders of junctional complexes containing desmosomes, gap junctions, and something called fascia adherens. They demarcate the end of cardiac myocyte from the other. They are responsible for not just union of individual of adjacent cardiac myocytes, but the gap junctions allow communication between the cardiac myocytes, which is very important for the transduction of the signal for contraction, right? We want everything in the ventricle or the atrium to contract at the same time. So these are our intercalated discs, appreciated very easily with the electron micrograph. So this is one here. So if you're looking at that single intercalated disc here, you're going to see it has like a transverse component and a longitudinal component. The transverse component is at a right angle with the myofibrils. So these are our myofibrils here, those things that form your A-band and your I-band and so on, they go in that direction. So your transverse component will be at right angles with it. So that's your transverse component. And your longitudinal component will be running along the same direction as your myofibril. All right? On your transverse component, you have your junctional stuff. So the transverse component cuts through the myofibrils like this. So it's going to hold the cell together from end to end. So it contains adherent stuff. So it has macular adherence or desmosomes, and fascia adherens, or adhering junctions. You may have spoken about this already in the first part of the term. So those are components, please remember, of the transverse component. The lateral or longitudinal component is parallel to the myofibrils, as you can see here, and it contains communicating or gap junction. It also contains some desmosomes. You don't see it here, but it does contain a few desmosomes. Desmosomes are everywhere, right? So, a better picture of the longitudinal component, that's on the side here. We don't see the gap junctions here, but we know that they're supposed to be there, right? Cardiac myocytes have lots of mitochondria. See the mitochondria here? Lots and lots of terminal cristae, indicating that there's lots of metabolic activity, oxidative activity going on inside there, which is important because you need to have your contractions occurring when you need it and very quickly. So, first question. Okay, so 3432, that's just click, right? So you should remember your junctional complexes. They're going to come back all the time, and we're going to always ask you about them in the exam. That's one of the things that is always cumulative. So please remember them. Communication would always be your gap junction. Your fascia and macular adherence are for union, for holding things together. Endomysium is on the outside and doesn't really have anything to do with the contraction, but with the transmission process. And your sarcomere, of course, is a unit of contraction. So cardiac muscle looks very similar to skeletal muscle, but you'll have fewer myofibrils within the cytoplasm, so much less myofibrils. Another important thing that happens is that you have in the skeletal muscle, remember we had our triad, which was two terminal cystinae of your endoplasmic sarcoplasmic reticulum approximating the T-tubule. And that is where the contraction is going to be initiated, the release of calcium and so on are going to be initiated. In the case of the cardiac muscle, you have a dyad instead of a triad, where you have one terminal cystinae and one T-tubule coming together. And that dyad is located at the Z-line, as opposed to the triad, which is located at the AI junction. So that's a very key feature. Skeletal muscle triad, AI junction, cardiac muscle dyad at the Z-line. So they'll go one dyad at the end of the sarcomere and the other dyad at the beginning of the sarcomere. The function there is the same, basically. The signal comes in after depolarization of the sacrolemma through the T-tubule, causes release of calcium from your sarcoplasmic reticulum, and that initiates the contraction. So that's your dyad here. So this is how cardiac muscle contraction is. This is basically physiology, so you're going to talk about this with Dr. Murray next week quite extensively and in your lab. You have voltage-gated proteins that, with the presence of calcium, they're going to change, and that's going to change the permeability of your, that's your T-tubule. So this is your T-tubule here. The depolarization wave has arrived. Once it arrives, then you have change in the voltage-gated sensor that causes release of calcium into the cytoplasm of the cardiac myocyte. And that initiates the contraction cycle, which is very similar to that of skeletal muscle, except the force is a little bit different. The release phase is a little bit shorter. The only thing that varies between the contraction of the three different types of muscle is the length of particular stages of the contraction cycle, and for histology purposes, you're not really responsible for them. So we're able to distinguish between the two types of striated muscle. We know what cardiac muscle looks like. We know about the functions of cardiac muscle. In addition to contraction, it produces these hormones. We can identify it in a histological slide. We know what intercalated disc looks like. There's another type of specialized cardiac muscle tissue that we find in the heart. They're called your Purkinje fibers. And they are glorified cardiac myocytes that have become hypertrophied, have lost a lot of their myofibrils, and replaced them with lots of glycogen. So they look very pale in your H&E and basic preparations. This is a trichromostein, not an H&E. But you notice here, this is typical cardiac myocytes, branched, very dark staining because of the mitochondria and all the myofibrils inside here. And these here, under the endocardium of the heart, are your Purkinje fibers. Purkinje fibers are the fibers that make up your conducting system of the heart. So they are in the bundle of His, in your bundle branch. They go between your nodes and your internodal fibers. Those are your Purkinje fibers. Be able to compare them with your typical cardiac myocyte by very few myofibrils. You don't really see striations. And very pale staining due to the glycogen content. There's also a lot more mitochondria in them than you do have in your cardiac cells. A large mitochondria. So this is a slide that we just talked about before. This is an example of probably a practical question you may get. So this region here will be your regular cardiac myocytes. And what is the characteristic feature of the cardiac myocytes? The presence of intercalated disc. All right? So characteristic feature is the presence of intercalated disc. All right? So cardiac muscles, can they repair themselves? You think? No, right? Technically speaking, there are papers out there and there's a lot of research about some small amounts of regeneration of cardiac myocytes. So maybe in the next 20 or so years when you guys are up there in charge of your research hospitals and so on, maybe you can find a way to regenerate cardiac myocytes and probably save most of the Western world who, you know, main issue is heart disease. Save us from extinction, right? Right? So they, unlike skeletal muscle cells, they're unable to regenerate themselves. So how does it, what happens when cardiac muscle is damaged? Like in ischemic heart disease, you have the replacement of the dead cardiac myocyte with fibrous tissue. And that's what leads to all of the problems that you have after myocardial infarction. Fibrous tissue cannot communicate properly. There's interruption between the communication between myocytes, so you have arrhythmias and so on occurring. That's in the case of a non-fatal arrhythmia. All right? Fibrous tissue, we'll talk about that in your clinical lectures. Lastly, we have our smooth myocytes, or smooth muscle cells. Those you find all over the body because they form the walls of your blood vessels. They form the walls of your gastrointestinal tract. They're found in the walls of the respiratory and genitourinary tract. They're found a lot of places all over the body. Now, these muscles are very special in that they're small and they're fusiform. They look kind of like leeches, you see. And they have a single central nucleus and a very homogeneous cytoplasm because they lack striations. They do, however, contain the same sort of myofibrils, myofilaments that you find in the regular, the other muscle cells. These myofilaments are arranged in a different fashion. They are arranged as clusters of actin filaments and so on that form dense bodies that we're going to see in a little bit. Normally, these muscles, they're fixed to each other and they act like a single sheet. So you have, they act like a syncytium. They contract more or less together in very slow, rhythmic contraction. They're innervated by the autonomic nervous system, by your myenteric plexus and your myosinus plexus that you will speak about later on in the term. The nucleus is usually located in the center, and the cells are stacked on each other, fitting each other end to end, like how you'll have what looks like that. Oh, like fitting several leeches on each other. So when you do a cross section through smooth muscle, like if you cut a section through here, because of how the cells are stacked on each other, sometimes you may catch a cytoplasmic region with no nucleus. Other times you may catch the nucleus at the tip. Other times you may catch a nucleus at the center. So what you have in the cross-section is areas without nuclei, areas with nuclei, and nuclei that have very different sizes. Almost pleomorphic. Very different sizes of the nucleus. The cell in itself has a fusiform appearance, and the nucleus has a corkscrew appearance in your histological section because of tissue preparation. Doesn't look like it here, but this one here looks like a corkscrew, right? The size of the length of smooth muscle varies. It can be very long, like in your pregnant uterus, or very short, like in your blood vessels. So look at them. Stretched, longitudinal section. Here we have the cross section. Absence of nucleus here in the cross section because of where the section is taken. Be familiar with the pictures. This is taken from your histology textbook, and it also is one of them that you have in your lab folder. So you'll see that next week. This one definitely is taken from your lab folder. So this is your smooth muscle here in clusters. Here you have nucleus and no nucleus, nucleus and no nucleus. This one is taken from the walls of the gastrointestinal tract. All right, so smooth muscle cells communicate via gap junctions like most other cells in the body. There's an abundance of gap junctions between the smooth muscle cells because they have to communicate contract together. There is well-developed sarcoplasmic reticulum, and you have a lot of pinocytotic vesicles. And the cytoplasm of the smooth muscle is characterized by the presence of these clusters of myofilaments called dense bodies. So that's one here. Doesn't look that dense in the electron micrograph that we have here, but you have better pictures in the lab. That's one here. Another one is here. Another one is probably around here. So another one is here. So these dense bodies represent the points where you have your actin and myosin coming together. The thin filament are actin filaments, and the thick filament are myosin filaments. They associate at the point where you have your dense bodies and you have associated proteins like your myosin light chain kinase. That's where the contraction starts. It's very different from the skeletal and cardiac muscles where you have your dyad and your triad. So your dense body, your associated proteins, your myosin light chain kinase. You have calmodulin that binds the calcium, very different from the troponin that you had in your skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle. Once calcium is made available from the smooth endoplasmic reticulum, it binds to calmodulin, and that initiates or activates the myosin light chain kinase, and that starts the contraction of the smooth muscle. Now notice how the myosin is arranged, right? This is how it's arranged in skeletal and cardiac muscle. So the myosin heads are oriented towards the center, so the contraction pulls the actin filaments towards the center. In the case of the smooth muscle, they are almost like they're pulling in the opposite direction. They pull in the opposite direction, and they're attached to the dense bodies at opposite poles of the cell. That causes the cell to squinch up like an accordion, like here. So this is where your dense body is, the point of your contact between your where your actin and so on is attached. The contraction will cause the movement of your thick and your thin filaments sliding like an accordion against each other, and that results in your squinching of your cell. I don't know what was the other word to use. Forms a corkscrew. And the nucleus also gets that same kind of squinched up or corkscrew shape. So the contracting apparatus of a smooth muscle is basically those dense bodies that we just saw there. And they represent the Z line where you have your actin and so on being attached. You don't have your sarcomere appearance that you have in your striated muscle. Other proteins that you find associated with smooth muscle are your desmin and vermentin. They are smooth muscles that are specifically like your vermentin and desmin, they are associated with vascular smooth muscle. We don't have them in the picture here, but they're around. I don't think you're responsible for them at this point. So you have your dense bodies, clusters of dense bodies. So because of the fact that there's no nice regular arrangement of myofibrils, you don't have that T-tubular system to bring the signal in. These cells are very small cells, so you can have simple diffusion of calcium away from the cytoplasm, of the contractile, simple depolarization of the cell membrane and simple diffusion of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum to wherever it needs to go in the cell, where the dense bodies are located. So remember, no T-tubule system. The analog of the T-tubule is your calveolar region, and calveolar basically is like invaginations of the cell membrane, not represented here, but the cell membrane more or less invaginates a little bit or dips in and forms these little vesicles on the outside of the cell. It's almost like stored cell membrane. So when the cell is contracted, you have the cell membrane curling up on itself to form these stored vesicles. When the cell is contracted and when the cell is relaxed, it's stretched out, then the vesicles go back up and reform and join the cell membrane. So smooth muscle contraction is an automated process. We don't control it. It's not voluntary. And the control is by several factors. The one that we probably know a lot about is the chemical one, where hormones like oxytocin are going to cause contraction of the smooth muscle. But also things like angiotensin and vasopressin could also cause smooth muscle contraction, specifically vascular smooth muscle for blood pressure. Electrical stimulation, that's from the noradrenaline, acetylcholine, and nerve endings that you have from your autonomic nervous system. But as well as, in the case of pregnancy, stretch. In the delivery process, the more the baby presses on the cervix or on the uterus wall, the stronger the contraction that's generated. So stretch is a mechanical factor for regulation of smooth muscle contraction. It's a positive feedback mechanism. Cool thing about smooth muscle contraction is that it's long and it's rhythmic. So these smooth muscles can stay contracted for a very long period of time. So you can maintain a contraction for a couple of seconds, 30 seconds, during the delivery process. Another important factor is that smooth muscle is able to make their own matrix. So a vascular smooth muscle is able to make all of the connective tissue that you find in the blood vessel wall. It's able to make your collagen fibers and reticular fibers, which is a collagen fiber. All of your gags and so on that you find in the blood vessel walls are formed by these smooth muscle cells. So they act as regular connective tissue cells. They act like fibroblasts. This is very important when we're talking about damage to blood vessels like in arteriosclerosis. The smooth muscle cells that get traumatized in because of high blood pressure is able to generate connective tissue in the walls of blood vessels. Can they repair themselves? Yes, we know that. Uterus can stretch and get damaged, fibroids get scooped out, and then it heals very nicely. Blood vessels can get cut and then reanastomose. And everything goes back to normal. So it has very good regenerative capacity. It has the best regenerative capacity of all of the muscle types. The muscle cells are able to replace themselves with new smooth muscle cells. They differentiate from cells that you have in the connective tissue associated with the smooth muscle. Another important feature is that smooth muscle is able to get large or hypertrophy. So they're able to replace themselves and grow and multiply. That's called hyperplasia. And they're able to increase in size. That's called hypertrophy. Smooth muscles are the only muscle cell types that are able to do both of these processes. I think this is our last clicker question. All right, so we have cytoplasmic dense bodies, characteristic, because we know intercalated disc, presence of striation, multinucleated cells and branch cells are characteristic of the two types of striated muscle fibers we've just looked at. Okay, so we're good. So this is a summary table of all the three types of muscle. This is just for you to, you don't have to do it for yourself now, it's there. So this is comparing all of the major features of muscle and seeing how the different types of muscles vary. Lastly, we're going to talk about the two types of muscle-like cells that we find that can be sometimes confusing because they sometimes represent smooth muscle cells. Myofibroblasts and myoepithelial cells. We've spoken about myoepithelial cells already when we did the first part of the term when we talked about connective tissue. Myofibroblasts are also mesenchymal-derived cells, so they're connective tissue cells from origin. So that means they're going to stain very well with stains for connective tissue, right? Like vermentin. Vermentin is a very important, is a stain that is characteristic for connective tissue, just as stains for cytokeratin is for epithelial tissue. So myofibroblasts, you usually find them located under mucosal tissue, under mucosal linings. So a classic place for it to be will be in the seminiferous tubule, close to the basal lamina of the seminiferous tubule and the connective tissue that surrounds it. You're also going to find them in scar tissue. So these cells, they're special. They're like doppelgangers. They're like a cross between a smooth muscle cell and a fibroblast. So they're able to, they have the features of smooth muscle cells, some of them, so they have dense bodies, they have actin, alpha actin and so on, alpha smooth muscle actin. They have some myosin inside there and they're able to contract a bit. But like fibroblasts, they have cytoplasmic projections, they have lots of smooth endoplasmic reticulum and Golgi apparatus to produce matrix. So they're able to produce matrix, but they're also able to contract, like for example in wound healing. So in the case of their location in the basal lamina of places like the genitourinary tract and gastrointestinal tract, or in the lamina, the area under the epithelium there, in this case, what they do basically is kind of to help keep the ductal structure intact. Their important function, however, is going to be in scar production. When you get a cut, or you have an interruption in the epithelium and the blood vessel and connective tissue, myofibroblasts are able to, they can form right there. They are able to come in, and the cytoplasmic projection are going to hold on to the connective tissue that's there for the, that is generated because of the inflammation process or because of the injury. So they hold on to the edge of the granulation tissue that's forming in the wound. And because of the myosin and actin contractile elements, they're able to contract and help pull the ends of the granulation tissue together, causing reduction of the wound. So you're going to find them in lots, in high concentration, in a healing scar. In atypical conditions, sometimes they continue to proliferate after the wound has healed and there's no longer any bleeding or inflammation, and that leads to the formation of hypertrophic scars. So your keloids and so on could be a function of hyperactivity of your myoepithelial cells, as well as fibroblasts and so on. Myofibroblasts. So these are myofibroblasts. This is taken from your textbook. Look how very similar they look to compared to fibroblasts. So that's your fibroblast here. Collagen fibers in cross-section. These are your myofibroblasts, and the difference will be the presence of dense bodies. So there's dense bodies here. You don't have any dense bodies in the fibroblasts. Dense bodies, some dense bodies here, lots of dense bodies around the place, absent in the fibroblasts. You still have secretory granules and Golgi and smooth endoplasmic reticulum, but you have the presence of actin-myosin interactions. Myoepithelial cells also may appear to be like muscle cells. They're contractile. They contain actin filaments. Places you're going to find them will be associated with your exocrine glands. So you find them in breast tissue, in the glands, the mammary glands. You find them in your salivary glands. Their function basically is to embrace or surround the acinus, the secretory unit of every exocrine gland, and the contraction causes expulsion of the substance, the secretory substance. So, doesn't have any dense bodies. It's a cell that would have actin and so on inside of it, but it doesn't have any dense bodies. So this is a myoepithelial cell here, and that's a secretory acinar cell. See all the secretory granules on the side here? This is the base of the gland, and a lovely myoepithelial cell here. Very similar to a fibroblast, but it'll have actin and so on in the cytoplasm. All right, this is our last clicker question. Really? Somebody said cardiac. We're not done yet. It's only 35 minutes. So we're talking about a scar tissue, and usually once you hear the term scar tissue, we're thinking of myofibroblasts, right? Not cardiac cells, and not smooth muscle cells, even though you may have some smooth muscle getting in there, depending on if your blood vessel gets damaged or not, but we're talking mainly about your myofibroblasts for contraction of the ends of the wound. So good job, guys. So, hold on. Oh, it's 2:41, okay. There you go. Hold on, I have one more, hold on. Try it. You said. All right. So let's talk about this. Skeletal muscle, when you talk about skeletal muscle, striatin, dense bodies, alveoli, hormonal control, somatic control? No. Long fibers? Yes. Variable length? Of course, no, because you're saying long fibers, right? Uh-huh. T-tubule plus two terminal cisternae? Fascia adherence? Multinucleated? All right. And let's do cardiac and then end. Cardiac, which one goes there? Striatin? Hormonal control? Which hormone? Epinephrine. Good. But it's mostly neuronal control. It's neuronal control, though. Epinephrine is more like indirectly affects the conducting system. But it's neuronal control. Hormonal control will be your smooth muscle, right? Autonomic neuronal control? Somatic neuronal control? You sure? Oh, okay. T-tubule and one terminal cisternae, how do we call that? Where is it located? Z-line, compared to the skeletal muscle, where is that located? AI junction, good job. Uh-huh. And multinucleated? Well, two is bi. So it's binucleated. So it's binucleated or mononucleated, all right? Usually when we say multinucleated, we mean like a lot, all right? Like 100 or so. Okay, that's it. The other one, we leave it for another time. Good job, guys. Take care of yourself. So you have 15, you have 17 minutes to go eat and come back to do nerve tissue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.